Hi, friends.
Hello, should I delete that, listeners?
We still have some tickets left for our live tour and we would absolutely love to see you there.
On Thursday, the 23rd of May, we will be performing in the London Islington Assembly Hall.
On Monday, the 27th of May, we will be in Salford.
On Tuesday, the 28th of May, we'll be in Glasgow.
Sunday, the 2nd of June, Birmingham.
Monday, the 3rd of June, Bristol.
And Tuesday, the 4th of June in Southampton.
You can get your tickets at aegpresents.co.uk or via the link in the show notes or our Instagram bios.
We really hope we see you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I remember I was walking somewhere and a woman came up to me and she said, "You are disgusting. You, my daughter almost died because of you." That period, everyone was so brutal. You know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
It was just like abuse city, wasn't it?
Hello and welcome back to Should I Delete That? I'm Em Clarkson.
And I'm Daisy Grant.
How are you doing, Daisy?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. Finally, the sun's out today. I know I always talk about the weather, but it's just one of those things, isn't it, that comes up.
You can take your Welsh sun and you can shove it up your ass because it's pissing down with rain over here.
It was hailing about 20 minutes ago, so...
Can't keep up.
I can't, yeah. I'm exhausted. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so excited for today's interview that I just feel like we just need to rattle through this because I just want to give the people this chance.
I agree. It's so great. It's so great.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
I loved it. So yeah. I'm really excited about that. But I would be remiss not to mention the worst bad of all the bads.
Oh, God.
I've waited for this for a year. There's something to be said in being careful what you wish for. I've got my period back. And it's so horrifying that I threw up yesterday.
And you have been, you literally just did a campaign about how you were like, "I love being in touch with my body.
I want my period back. I just want to feel in touch with myself." Idiot.
And now
Idiot.
You're being sick in the toilet.
Idiot. Yes, so Rank, Alex got me a little cookie, a little like, sorry that your uterus lining's being an absolute wanker cookie. I threw it up.
I'm so sorry. That's awful. That's really bad.
It's okay. I have been waiting for it. I am, on balance, incredibly happy that it's back. And I know that sounds really mad to people, but I have just felt like I've been in no man's land for so long. And like, I want to make sense of myself. Who the fuck
totally.
Am I? These hormones are deranged and I need to know what's up.
Going through motherhood and like having your whole kind of like self... become a mother, like you're feeding your child, like you're literally out of sync with yourself. Like, it must be quite nice to be like, okay, that cycle is back now.
Yeah, I like that cycle. In an unrelated twist, I was offered the opportunity to do magic mushrooms next weekend, and for a few reasons I had to say no, but overwhelmingly the reason was I am on a knife's edge right now. Like, I am so fucking volatile in terms of my own emotions. The very last thing I need to add to the equation, the recipe as it were, would be a drug.
It could be the cure. I don't think it's worth the risk.
High risk, high reward strategy, that one.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth it.
I said
it.
No. And good. I was so proud of myself because I very rarely get offered drugs, which I feel like is probably not a surprise. But I don't often get the opportunity to just say no.
Yeah.
As the Naughties campaigns told us. But I did. I got it. And I was like, no. I actually applied and said, "I'm just going to say no."
Well done. Well done.
Thanks.
To you. You can feel good about
Thanks.
That. Any
Thanks.
Goods? Anything good?
I'm not doing magic mushrooms. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's sensible.
Anything good or bad on your side?
I got a combined good and bad this
Love
week.
That. The roller coaster. Ronan Keating prophesized.
Ah, it is. I'm happy because my hair is, I think, through the awkward stage of like length.
It looks so cool.
Thanks. it's partly due to your concoction of like things to slick it down. So I appreciate your contribution to this.
No worries.
I got that wax that you have.
The OA one.
Oh my God. It smells like heaven.
Isn't it unbelievable? I've had my pot for about 3 years and I've barely even gone through the first layer.
I have to use quite a lot of gel because there's a lot of layers going on. So then I use a gel and then I put that on top and it smells so good. So yeah. I love that. It still needs to be cut. It's still not right. I'm just trying to get the length. Anyway, it's the longest it's been literally since I was 14, and even then, I've just never had it, you know, so it's quite exciting for me. At the same time, the bad, and usually I'm like chill about this and it's like kind of fun, but like those are white hairs. That is a cluster of white hairs right there. They're coming thick and fast, and they're not fucking around.
I think it's actually really cool. Like, one of my best friends is embracing going gray, and yeah, she looks so iconic.
Yeah.
Could never be me. Yeah. I will not. I will resist aging for as long as I humanly can. But on other people,
I know I'm in my prime. I know I'm going to be in my prime when I'm literally 50 years old. I can't wait. Like, I know it's coming. But like, going from brown to white is quite a hectic
You've
turn
got
of events.
You've got a Helen Bowen Carter. This. You've got okay. a mean. In cut them around who?
Yeah. Okay, the Helena Bonham Carter was what really did it for me. Okay,
I knew it.
It's only goods. It's only goods now.
It's only good. Call me Helena. Yeah, she's an icon.
She is
an icon.
She's the.
Have you seen? Have
best.
You seen her like the photos of her, like pap photos of her?
Yes, I get them on my
day to day.
I get them on my Instagram every day.
Is like, she your fashion icon?
She's actually funny you say that because I always send pictures of her to Daisy, and I'm like, this is how you should dress. This is you. This is you. We always say that, and then you know Giles and Mary on Gogglebox. Do you know them?
I do. Of course I do.
Yeah. So we always say that Mary is like what Daisy is going to dress like when she's older. Like the funny pattern tights and the weird long skirts. Like just very bizarre. But I'm like, this is you in the future. So that combined with Helena Bonham Carter, beautiful.
There is something about a pattern tight that doesn't excite me.
Oh, it is bordering on like frumpy. It's bordering on frumpy. But I think it can be embraced.
All the best things are.
Yeah,
and I'll stand
true,
by
actually.
That. I will stand by that.
I like that. So, any awkwards?
Yes, actually, leading on from frumpy. And I know we're not supposed to. I know. Okay, we embrace our beautiful bodies.
We embrace our white hairs.
We're BOPO, whatever, right? I get it. But the other day, I had to go to the physio because my hip's bad because I'm 40,000 years old. And the woman gave me the physio shorts. And if you've not been to a physio, wear shorts. If you ever book a physio appointment, just take your own shorts, okay? Because it's or just be cool with standing in your pants because it's an excruciating process. And she went, do you mind being in your pants or do you want to wear the shorts? I was like, oh, I'll wear the shorts. She brought the shorts out and she went, they're massive, but they'll do. I was like, okay. Daisy Club, they were not massive.
Oh, how dare she?
I mean, objectively, yeah, but, you know, define massive, you know what I mean? Like, it's fine. But I put them on and they were really big on my waist, but so tight on my juicy hips.
My juicy and, hips.
And my thighs. Anyway, so she was trying to, like, make me squat and, like, check my rotation and, like, bend my legs over each other. All massively difficult because the shorts were so tight, so I couldn't be like, oh yeah, they're so
what did
massive.
You go in wearing
leggings?
Yeah, I thought leggings would have been the right thing.
No, so I wore the massive, not massive shorts, and it was just a little bit crushing, just a little bit.
She really needs to not say these are massive but they'll do.
She is the most she's a beanpole of a woman.
Oh.
So I get it. To her it doesn't matter. It wasn't really the fact that they didn't fit. That doesn't really bother me. It was more just the actual awkwardness of them not fitting and yeah. like having to like fold myself into a million which ways and shorts. I just didn't. It was just a bit, the whole thing. When she said you can put your leggings back on, I was like, oh, sweet relief.
Yeah. Okay. Sweet relief.
So yeah, hated that. Anything awkward from your side?
Yeah, the exhaust fell off my car. Oh, it happened. No. Listen, it's literally the third time it's happened. It's happened so many times. I think it's the sea air around here. Like it rusts the exhaust. I don't fucking know. Anyway, it was like the middle of the night. It was so embarrassing. It was like 10 p.m. And we live on a street that's like a one-way street. So it, at like 10 p.m., we had to drive the car round the one way and then get round to our street, and just with the exhaust dragging along so loudly on the floor at 10 p.m. Like, it's not, and it was like a Thursday. Oh my God, it was so embarrassing. And then I remember so we got out of the car.
These silly women.
I was so ashamed.
In their frumpy little tights.
I know, frumpy little tights, and their exhaust literally hanging off the fucking car. And it was so embarrassing. I remember we got out of the car, and then I heard some people saying, "Their exhaust is falling off," and I was like, "Oh my God, where are the voices coming from?" I couldn't locate the voices. It was like they were looking out the window, like, "What the fuck is that noise?" It was so loud. It was really bad. It's been fixed. But
the bumper fell off my car once when I was driving home.
Oh my God!
If that makes you feel any better, my brother borrowed my car, beached it because he's a knob again by the sea, drove down a path that he couldn't get down, literally beached it, had to be towed. It was a whole thing. This was in the Isle of Man. I drove it the whole way back, and literally when I got like within 10 miles, having done like a 400 mile trip, when I got within 10 miles of my own house, he was in the passenger seat. The fucking bumper just fell off the car. It must have been hanging by a thread down the motorway. Thank God it happened on the quieter roads. Anyway, I was like, I just looked at him. I was like, "Get your wallet out your pocket. We're going straight to a garage."
This is
like,
you. This is you.
This is all on you, brother. So don't worry. It happens to the best of
it's
us.
It's so shameful. That drive to get it to where it needs to go. Oh, mortifying. Absolutely mortifying. But all fixed now. So there we go.
Can't wait to hear it. Never. Can't wait to hear when it happens again.
Speaking of incredible drivers...
What a segue, Daisy Brown.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Kind of sarcastic, but also brilliant, I think. Sarcastic for me, not for the guest.
Yeah, it's like, why throwing shade?
Never throwing shade. She's my hero, I've decided now. I love her.
Oh my gosh, she's the best. Guys, I'm so excited by today's interview. I think we say it at the beginning, but Jodie and I have been friends for like... I'm going to bust us on our age, but we've been friends for nearly 20 years maybe, which is insane. And I'm so grateful that she came and had this chat. And actually, it's amazing when you meet somebody at a stage in their life and you never really talk to them about the stage before the stage that you knew them in. So I absolutely loved this conversation. I thought it was so amazing. I hope you guys are as enlightened and inspired as we are by this amazing woman. So without further ado, here is Jodie Kidd.
Hi, Jodes.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. For listener context, I've known you since I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
I came to your house when I was a child and I stood on a piece of glass.
Oh my God, you remember that?
And my foot bled, It was like, I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
It's Jodie Kidd and my foot. I remember that. So and we had the all over her sofa.
Tweezers out.
How embarrassing. It was like a whole operation going on.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, to get the glass out of my foot. I was like, I'm such an attention seeker. I hate this.
How long ago was that? So 12. So how old are you
17
now?
17 years ago.
Holy moly.
I know, I've known you for ages.
Wow.
But you were so nice to me, even though I was embarrassingly bleeding. I know. Well, I just think you're the warmest and loveliest person. And we love you. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'll pay you later.
Yeah. Alex can send you.
Can I have some too?
Exactly. Compliments or money?
Money. I also take compliments. Just as well received.
Something you and I have never spoken about is your career before I knew you.
Yes.
And that was as a supermodel.
It was. It's quite weird kind of thinking that, because it was like, it's almost not part of who I am or who, you know, it's obviously who I am now. It's kind of, I've learned a lot from it, but it's like, it didn't really exist. It's kind of, and it was a long time ago, but it's quite strange. It really is. And it was such a whirlwind.
Yeah.
It's a mad world. And I kind of went in and out quite quickly. I think I did a good about 10 years, but worked a lot, and then kind of had to retreat quite quickly because it wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of, and because it was quite, not traumatic, it was amazing, I don't want to put it down, but it was because I was going through, you know, a lot of bad press at the time, being hounded by the wonderful newspapers, I had glandular fever, I had anxiety, I had all of these things. So for me, it wasn't a very happy time, even though I was doing some amazing things working with the best photographers, the best designers, hair, makeup, you know, opening and closing the biggest shows. It was still a bit kind of traumatic. So I put it in a box and then kind of my life in is kind of started after that, even though it kind of built a lot of the building blocks of who I am today. But it, yeah, it was a whirlwind, but amazing. I can't put it down at all. But it's a surreal world. And to be, you know, at the top, it was, yeah, just kind of sitting there and Naomi Campbell on your left and, you know, Christy Turlington on your right. And you're just suddenly going 15 years old, just came out of school. Yeah, couldn't get any weirder.
15.
So just finished my GCSEs.
How did that happen?
Well, I wanted to become, my whole childhood was riding horses and I wanted to be a show jumper. My dad was almost made the Olympic team as a show jumper. And so that was, I wanted to kind of follow in his footsteps. And so I had a little pony that I used to do all of the little kind of like shows and was quite successful and, you know, was really trying to get on the junior British team. And I bought this, just going into horses and bought this youngster and I had this tiny little lorry and he kept on rubbing his tail on the back of the lorry. So I needed to get a bigger lorry for him and I didn't have enough money. So mum said, you know, you should try some modelling. I had a friend that that actually said to me, you know, Jodie's quite tall and quite quirky and quite weird looking. She should model. And mum was like, no, she just wants to ride. And, you know, she's not interested. She's such a tomboy, literally never wore a dress, never wore makeup. And she said, well, why don't you go down and see her and give it a go? And, you know, you could earn some money and get your lorry. So I thought, oh, God.
You must be the only person that's gone into supermodelling to get a lorry. I just really need a lorry.
It's really weird, isn't it?
Love it.
I know. So, yeah, so I went down and met with Lorraine Ashton, who had an agency called IMG at the time. And literally from the moment I took some test pictures, I was in New York opening Marc Jacobs within a couple of weeks. And that was it. My complete like whirlwind merry-go-round started and had to sell my youngster, my horse.
No,
which was really, it was a big decision. But it was kind of like if I was struggling as a model and just doing bits here, there and everywhere, I would have definitely gone back to the horses. But because it went so stratospheric so quickly, I just kind of rode this wave. So it was a big decision, actually, that you know, the moment I said, right, I'm gonna give this one a go. But that's kind of very much who I am and what I do. I just, you know, you kind of say, why didn't you try this? It's like racing cars. Someone said, why didn't you try it? And I was like, yeah, why not? And then I kind of make a career out of it. And so you kind of give me an inch and I'm like, grab it. I go, right, let's do it. Fully immerse myself. But yeah, so I never got back to show jumping, which was a shame. But anyway, it started this kind of crazy life.
And had you finished school?
Yes, right. Just finished because I'm September 25th, so I'm a year ahead, or I don't know. So I was the kind of the youngest. Oh, I can't remember. You see, obviously didn't get any GCSEs. No, I did. This is the funniest thing. So dad, you know, worked incredibly hard to give us all private education. And we were all kind of in boarding schools because it was that kind of era, you know, the 70s and 80s and 90s. We were all kind of put in boarding schools if you could afford it. And so my he's very proud of this, that my brother finished school after his GCSEs. He got one GCSE, which was an A in art. My sister finished school, did her GCSEs, got one GCSE, got a B in art. And I did the same, got one GCSE, which was a C in art. So his dinner party kind of like jokes are going, thank God I spent so much hard-earned money on sending my kids to private school and got absolutely nothing. And none of us have gone into the art industry at all. But yeah, so anyway, left school quite young and went straight into like literally living on a 747.
And that is a crazy world to be thrown into at the age of 15 years old.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard enough to just live like a normal, stable life at 15 years old, never mind this.
Yeah, I think if I wasn't kind of mentally older, because I'm the youngest of five, I highly, you know, don't advise anyone to send their child into such an adult world at such a young age, because at 15 you really are.
That's really interesting you say that. I think we keep saying it now, like, the amount of child stars and, like, you know, younger child stars. But it's like, I actually can't think of a child star that, like, makes it through unscathed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just so intense.
Yeah, it really is.
But people keep doing it. Like, we just watch more and more children. And it's like lambs, particularly now watching, like, people, I don't know, influencer kids and stuff. Yeah. It's like, oh,
it's probably greedy parents.
Yeah. Do you think that's what it is?
I don't know. I mean, yes, I can't imagine. You know, at 15, because I think being the youngest of five and having to be quite adult, and being, you know, sent to boarding school and things like that, it makes you a little bit more kind of, you know, self-independent. Mm. So I think that that really helped. But I think, you know, a lot of youngsters that we see that are really kind of prepped to do TV or to do things like that, that they're a little bit more mollycoddled.
Mm.
And I think that makes them a little bit more vulnerable, and so much more manipulative. If, you know, to the parents, should we say.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is sad to see a lot of these child stars kind of, you know, go wobbly. But it's an adult world, you know, really being thrust into a serious adult world. You're traveling around the world on your own. You're working with adults. You know, we've all heard, you know, horror stories. But it is a big thing.
Yeah.
It really is.
I never really thought about it like that as an adult. Well, and actually, you were always, just to me, such a contradiction to everything I thought about modelling, because when you look at supermodels, or you thought about it as, like, as a young teenager myself, when I first met you, it's like, well, I wasn't even a teenager, but it's like you assume that it's, there's such a sort of trope about it, and it does seem such a, like, cold industry in so many ways. And you're such a juxtaposition to that, because you were the warmest person I'd ever met. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. But it feels like you didn't lose. And I don't know if it does. I don't know if it's just the way that we perceive models and that industry, that it's, that you don't have a, I don't know, that it feels a lot colder looking at the industry, maybe than your.
I definitely did change. And I think that's why I started getting anxiety, and I started not liking who I was becoming, because you do get paid immensely well. You're flying around. I mean, I would literally get on Concorde from London at 9 o'clock, arrive in New York at 9 o'clock, shoot all day, and then get on Concorde at 5 and be back home, because I didn't want to stay overnight. Wow. I mean, that's just mental. I was doing that like twice a week at 16, 17 years old. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous if I think back at it. And, you know, and they do build you up. You do feel like you're the most important person in the room. Mm. And that does change you. And I did find myself becoming not a very nice human being, which is totally, I think, why my head mentally went a bit wobbly, because I just didn't like who I was becoming. And then I started getting, you know, very serious kind of anxiety. And I think that that's why I had to run. I had to run back to the country and go back riding horses and start growing vegetables again. And just, you know, I hated who I was becoming. But they do build you up to become little horrors. Mm. And that's obviously what we see now, you know, with some of the big models definitely becoming quite a handful.
Yeah. I always find it so fascinating to hear. And it feels like this is the story time and time again of people really at the top of their game and doing, you said you were doing these incredible, you know, opening these shows for huge designers, like working with amazing photographers. But you didn't enjoy that experience. It felt traumatic. The whole thing felt traumatic. And I always find that so fascinating, because from the outside, it's like, wow,
why are you
doing
it?
That is so glamorous, like, you know, opening these shows and mixing with all these amazing models. And
I mean, there is a lot of people that love it. That most of your biggies that are still there now really, really love it.
Do they? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I just think it was because, you know, I was shoveling shit for my whole kind of, you know, whole life. I was living in a yard, and this was just so kind of foreign to me. And it's, and I had no aspirations to become a model, that, you know, I wanted to be like John Whittaker. I wanted to ride horses and yeah. you know, be a show jumper. And so that's why I think I was the biggest kind of anti-model model. I was like, you know, always like kind of the moody one in the corner. But the thing is, you're being paid, you know, and I can't be ungrateful at all. I am immensely grateful for every opportunity and every catwalk show and every designer that asked me to, you know, be the face of their campaign. And I did love it. There were moments where it was so, you know, you could be so free. But I think eventually it just started. It's just not really me. And it's, you know, it's such a mad world.
Was there pressure on you to look a certain way?
Yeah.
If it had never been an aspiration, because yeah. obviously you're so tall and so beautiful, yes. but oh, the, but, oh. you are, but Algie wants some of these compliments too. You're less tall, but also so beautiful. Yes. But what the industry asks of you is crazy.
You could be skinny.
So skinny.
Yeah.
Was that a pressure?
For me, I was very, very lucky. You know, I was 6'1" when I was 15. I had a strength. I had muscle on me because I was riding. Mm. And then I suddenly lost all that muscle because I was just flying around the world. I didn't go to the gym. Also stopped eating good food. So I was always brought up in the countryside, grew our own veg, always really healthy. And then suddenly you're flying around the world and you're landing in a foreign city. You didn't have access to, you know, to pret-a-manger or to, you know, somewhere you could get a nice salad. You didn't. You literally could get, you had to have a reservation at a restaurant, or you had McDonald's or Burger King or something. You had no places that you could get fast food really that was healthy. So I started eating really badly. So I was kind of losing weight because I lost my muscle. So, but that was perfect. I was like a walking hanger. So I was the perfect shape. But there are other girls, and I know, I mean, horror stories of, you know, girls in Milan that were told to eat cotton wool to make sure that their tummies felt full, but so that they didn't eat, you know, real given pills to stop eating, you know, kind of like amphetamines and speed and things like that. So yeah, it was happening a lot, but I was really lucky to be blinkered because I was just this ginormous. I was one of the tallest girls anyway, so I was kind of like, I didn't really see it, but I certainly heard it. And I saw how miserable girls were, you know, trying to be this certain weight. And also the brutality of people and art directors and, you know, designers of turning around and going, you know, really fat shaming. Mm. And the damage that was doing to, you know, to some of the girls and the guys. Sorry, I keep forgetting. You know, a lot of the male models had even worse a time than we did. Really? So it's quite a brutal industry. There's a lot of rejection. So, you know, you've got to be quite strong. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, there is this amazing other side of creativity and brilliant people. So it's tough. It's a really tough one. You know, if you're struggling and you're in that middle section, it's really quite brutal. But if you're in the top, you know, the top echelon, it's the most fantastic world ever. But it's tough to get into that level.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
What was your favourite job, the best thing you did during these 10 years?
Oh, God. There was once, I mean, obviously that I did, I was on exclusivity with Karl Lagerfeld and Chanel. So I could only work for him. So I literally lived in his house and we just took photographs and did campaigns. But to see this man that you'd sit and have lunch with, that was running, I think, 4 of the biggest fashion houses at the time, which was kind of Chloe, Fendi, Chanel, and then he had his own line. So he would just sit there and just draw designs whilst you're just sitting, having a bit of pasta, and then do another one and another one and another one. And you're just going, God, this man is
your GCSE
quite,
C is, art.
Oh, yes. Do you want me to help?
I could do the colouring in.
Yes, exactly. I can shade. I'm very good at shading. So kind of it's seeing, you know, geniuses at work like that, you know, some of the most incredible hair and makeup artists. There was one show that was quite fun, and it was for Yoji Yamamoto, and I was the bride. He had this tiny little entrance and this long catwalk, and he said, right, I want you to be the bride, but you're going to have to wear big DMs. And I was like, oh, of course, so delicate. and he put me in this kind of bamboo, ginormous kind of dress. And the bamboo was like holding up the material. And then this huge bamboo hat. And he said, right, you've got to lift it all up, fold it in. And literally he pushed me through this hole. They were like all of them pushing me through the hole to get out. And then I got out the other side and I had to let go. And this whole wedding dress went, whoa. And as I walked down, it was covering the first 2 rows of the catwalk either side. God. It was quite amazing. Wow. So they saw it. But it had... I can't remember kind of like the structure of it. It was just beautiful.
Wow.
So that was quite fun. Alexander McQueen, when he asked me the first time he took over the House of Givenchy, he asked me to open that. That was quite a big thing.
Quite a big thing.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. So no, amazing memories. Wow. Amazing memories. And, you know, I can't talk too bad about the industry because it is an incredible industry, and I was very lucky to work, you know, with some of the greats, and especially Alexander. You know, Lee was awesome, and I was kind of there through most of his period, so that was, I felt immensely blessed to kind of be part of that era.
What was it then that just made you walk away.
I got anxiety. I got to a point where I started not sleeping. So every time, so I used to do a lot of shows because I was so tall, and you do spring, summer, autumn, winter, and then you do London, Milan, New York, Paris. And so you're doing those chunks twice a year. And then I was doing couture as well for the same twice. So it was constant shows, sometimes doing 10 shows a day.
And you do all 4 cities.
And I'd do all 4 cities. Wow. And then it started becoming, I was getting really bad press in the UK about being too skinny, because as I said, I kind of lost all of my muscle and I did get a bit skinny. I wasn't eating well. And then the worst thing was I started getting insomnia because I was kind of like dreading the next day, because I was kind of like having to walk down the catwalk, and then I thought all the photographers are going to be, you know, just slagging me off, and I'm going to be front pages of all the kind of the red tops, and so this kind of perpetual kind of downward motion of not being able to sleep, then losing appetite, constantly being in fight or flight. So I was never hungry because I was just like this. So it wasn't, you know, bulimia or anorexia or anything like this. I was just on adrenaline. I just literally, my adrenal glands must have been like completely. So it just got to a point which I would just be literally weeping. So I went to a doctor. He said, just breathe into a brown paper bag, which of course is like the worst thing that you could possibly do. Then they put me on beta blockers and I was like walking around like an absolute zombie. And then I was just like, this is, you know, I've been brought up you know, literally in the hay bales, galloping across fields, you know, being, you know, very, very sporty. And I was like, this is not for me. So I actually just, I remember walking, my last catwalk was, I can't remember the name of the designer, it was in Milan. And I came out and I walked halfway down. I got a massive panic attack. I turned around halfway down the catwalk, ran off, got into my clothes. And the designer was going mad because I had about three or four other outfits and just went straight to the airport. And that was it. Never went back.
That was it.
Yeah, I just couldn't do it. Just literally
did you ever
break down.
It?
No. I mean, no. No, because I then went on to other things. I went, you know... Yeah. And loved those other things because I went back into sport. I went back into eating healthily. I went, started my whole racing car career. It kind of like, so no, I'm very thankful for it to have opened doors for me to go into these other careers.
So you were 25, is that right, at the time when you left?
It's probably a bit younger. I mean, I still did editorial, but I just never did catwalk. I never went on that roller coaster anymore.
Okay.
So I probably did editorial pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then was there a point when you were like, I'm done with that as well? Like, I'm completely done with modelling?
I mean, I love doing a shoot every now and then. It's quite fun. You know, there's lots of charity, like lovely ranking kind of, you know, supporting gorgeous charities. It's so nice to kind of tip your toe back in.
And be selective, right?
Yeah.
About what you do.
But yeah, so, but I'm very much kind of out of it now and doing lots of other things.
When you went home, what was it like coming home again? Like, was it, I mean, like, when you describe your life, I'm like, oh my God, it literally sounds like a Jilly Cooper book at that time. It's like, I just want to be riding the horses, but I had to go and get on Concorde and now I'm back. And it's like, was it walking back and just be like, oh my God, I'm home?
I mean, it was, there was a lot of trauma I had to deal with. I had to seriously learn how to heal myself. Mm. And no one really understood anxiety at that time. So doctors weren't really helping me. And so I kind of went on this whole kind of path to try and find, you know, how to stop myself getting panic attacks and literally go around a supermarket or suddenly just get boom and just run out with the trolley just kind of still standing there. You know, anxiety is a funny old thing. So I had to kind of learn how to get out of it, you know, and that was through crystals, that was through good old back flower remedies. You know, it's kind of like there is no rhyme or reason of how to stop it. It's the brain is an extraordinary thing. And mine was very much getting back into exercise, getting back out to the countryside, eating good food again. You know, all of these things that we really now know are so important for our body.
Did you have resentment for the press? Did they leave you alone when you came back?
They did, because I just became a hermit.
Yeah.
You know, I just literally moved out to the countryside.
Do you think that was the majority of the trauma, though, is what they did to you? Or?
Yeah, I think very much. I mean, thankfully, I didn't see a lot of what was going on. I remember coming home once and I put on the TV and it was Kilroy. And they had like the whole thing with the head. And I was going, oh, I know that. He's a photographer. And then I was going, oh my God, it's my old agent. And then the whole thing was discussing whether I was a terrible role model and, you know, this and that. And it was just like, and I was like, oh, for God's sake.
Why? Just... Because of your body size?
Yeah. They thought that I was anorexic and I was promoting anorexia and all of these things. So, yeah. So, which I wasn't. And so I was just so frustrated.
Even if you had been, you'd still have been a victim of something and you'd have been ill. So it's actually deranged.
It's,
but like,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, because that's really going to help you, isn't it? Having a docu-special about
literally
looking into your...
Every day on the front pages of a newspaper, just being slated. I remember I was walking somewhere and a woman came up to me and she said, you are disgusting. My daughter almost died because of you.
Jodie,
and I was just like,
wow,
so mean.
That's awful.
Yeah, but I mean, it's that period, everyone was so brutal. You know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
It was just like abuse city, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because of the press.
And the irony being is if you'd have been a little bit bigger, then you would have been slated for being too big to be a model.
I mean, you can do no rights or wrongs, really.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's it was pretty so full on.
I'm really sorry for you.
Oh, no,
that's
don't.
Like really horrible though.
Yeah, that is horrible.
No wonder you were so anxious.
Because it kind of, I've learned from these, and if I hadn't had all of these things, then I wouldn't be here. Yeah. I wouldn't be, you know, who I am today. I had to learn these hard lessons. And, you know, it's part of me.
Mm.
So it's kind of all our, it's all our lives and our process, and it's how you kind of compartmentalize them and how you deal with them,
yeah,
and move on from them and learn, but never regret.
No.
It's really important.
You don't regret anything?
No. That's maybe so cool. Snogging John at 12. No, I didn't snog
poor
John at 12.
John. John's like, me.
Oh, dear.
How long did it take you between finishing being... doing your modelling and then driving, racing and finding your other passions?
Well, I wanted to get back into horses, and the only, because I knew that I was safe on a horse and I knew horses kind of, I would be okay. And I was still, this is when I was like really finding it hard to leave the front door because the anxiety was so huge. And I knew horses would heal me. And the only horses I had access to was my brother's, and he was a polo player. And so I started going and riding his polo ponies. And then he was like, go on, take a stick and just go and have a little hit. And so I was like, oh, love this. And then this is me, typical me, completely immerse myself. And then, so I think within about 2 years, I had 22 polo ponies. I was winning the Women's World Championships. Represented England, yeah. So that was just,
I love that. It's so good.
So that was kind of a
that would have
mad
gone
couple
so
of years.
So differently if literally anyone else. I imagine, like, oh, you just given a hit. I'd have fallen straight off the horse. You wouldn't.
I'd have died
on it.
Yeah. I'd have died.
It's no, to me, polo ponies are so easy to ride. They're
are they
the easiest.
Small?
They're quite small. They're much smaller than show right. jumpers would be.
Okay,
but they're really well. Behaves.
I've got such a good mental image of you on a polo horse.
Disaster.
Oh dear. Yeah, and then I can't. And then, oh yeah. So driving came from one of my sponsors playing polo was Maserati, and then so I became very close to this lovely lady called Sylvia Pini, and I was doing something. I can't remember the timelines because they all come, it was a long time ago. But I did something called the Gumball Rally. Someone just said group of friends said, look, jump in the back. It's really fun. We're going to go across America. And so so I thought, why not? I don't know America as in, you know, I've done LA and kind of New York, but never really seen Middle America and travelled. So anyway, did it. Amazing cars. Then I had to fly back to the UK to give an award at the GQ Awards, and I sat next to your dad. And I went, oh my God, you're the car man. I said, I've just been doing this rally and there's F40s and F50s and this Koenigsegg did 242 miles an hour. And he was listening. He was going, wow, you know about cars. He said, come and do my show. And I was like, to be honest, I hadn't really watched Top Gear. And I didn't think anything more of it. And then I got a call a couple of months later. They said, come down to Dunsfold. And I was actually just down the road because I live in Sussex. And then turned up, really had no idea what the whole process was. And I got in the car and did a lap with the Stig. And then he got out and then he said, right, go. And I remember I phoned Jamie Oliver and I said, how many laps do you do? And he said, oh, about 10. And then after about three, they said, right, get out. And I was like, no, I think I can get that corner there a bit better. And they said, no, okay, you got to get out. So anyway, then you go to the studio in the afternoon. And that's where they said, right, you'd gone straight to the top of the leaderboard.
Did you?
And apparently I'd done it on my second lap.
Cool.
And then by my third lap, I was like half a second quicker. And they were going, okay, no, you've got to stop now.
You're too good. Yeah,
no. But then I just fell in love with cars and went off and got my ARDS, which is a provisional racing. Then I met up with Sylvia from Maserati and ended up racing for Maserati for about 3 years. Yeah, so that was kind of like...
I know. I mean, one of my questions I was going to ask, like, after the modelling decade, did you miss all those high highs? But no. It sounds like you...
found them in other things.
You found them elsewhere. Yeah.
A bit of adrenaline junkie. Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely found this, you know,
yeah,
kind of that buzz feeling that you get from walking down a catwalk in other in other things, in other forms, more healthier forms.
You did something, I actually just trying to remember. I think skiing, something really dangerous.
Did I do what, the jump?
The jump, you did.
Did you do it?
Absolutely, I didn't want to do it at all. I had never seen the show before.
And
I
was with doing shows you've never seen.
I know. And I was actually skiing with Indy, and my son, and we were skiing around, and I got a phone call from Saatchi, my agent, and they said, can you be in Austria, wherever it is in Austria, tomorrow? And I was like, why? And they were like, someone's had an injury. I didn't realize that they'd broken all their ribs and something like that. They'd all been there for like weeks and weeks and weeks training. They said, can you be there tomorrow? And so I turned up. I was like, okay, Indy's going. Well, Indy came with me. And the first thing I did on the first day after not knowing, they said, don't worry. You just do a bit of slalom, do a bit of downhill. You know, it's absolutely fine. Might do a little jump.
It's, I was like,
what kind
jump?
Of jump? I was like, they were like, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And then turned up and they said, right, straight up to the top because you've got to go straight into filming. And they literally put me on a silver tray. So I remember going up to the top of this toboggan run. I think that's what you call it. And Amy Williams was there, who's our gold medalist for going headfirst down a very steep ice track.
For the bobsleigh?
Skeleton. That's it, skeleton. Yeah, and they literally horrific. Put me on like a little silver tray, head first, and said, off you go, like that. And I was like, like this, going, fuck am I doing? So anyway, I got to the bottom and I was like phoning up my agent, I'm not doing this. They were like, you'll be fine. And I was like, it was the worst experience I've ever had in my life.
The show's not still going anymore, is it?
No, I think they when they broke someone's back was the point where they went.
Tina Hobley broke her leg.
Yes.
Whose back broke?
The gymnast.
I'm going to Google
Beth Tweddle.
Beth.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Beth.
Yes, I do. Yes.
They broke her back.
Shit.
It's not great.
No. Well, let's stop now. But yeah, so I thought, right, I need to get off the show as quickly as possible.
Go home.
Tina Hobley broke her arm. Mark Francis from Made in Chelsea fractured his ankle.
Yeah.
Sarah Harding damaged her knee and Rebecca Adlington dislocated her shoulder.
No, honestly, it's carnage.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's, and then absolute carnage.
Beth Tweedle sued the jump because she broke her back.
She broke her back. I mean, so I was like, I need to get off this show ASAP. So I became the worst skier and I've been skiing most of my life and I know how to ski, but I suddenly became like the worst skier ever.
So
and then got voted off like first or.
Perfect.
Yeah. And then they keep you up there. It's one of these shows where they keep you up there. So I just sat in Innsbruck with some lovely Vacheron hot wine.
Oh, that sounds gorgeous.
And just celebrated. Celebrated
yeah,
everyone.
That sounds really
jumping.
Nice.
I never did the jump.
Watching them all just breaking and breaking.
Like, oh,
sore
jump.
Ankle, sore leg.
more Vacheron, please.
That is so brutal.
Anyway, yeah, it's one of those. I love, actually, that's one thing I love about the modelling world is it's made me, you know, a semi-public figure that I get invited to do.
Fun stuff.
Fun, like, you know, MasterChef. If I hadn't have done MasterChef.
What was that like?
I would have never have bought the pub and I would have never have done, you know, all of this food kind of stuff
You're
I'm doing now.
You're such a yes person.
I really,
No.
I'm quite good at saying no. I'm getting much better at it.
Yeah?
Yeah. But like shows like that, I just love to go, where else are you going to learn by the best chefs?
Oh my God, what was it like?
Terrifying, but brilliant.
Yeah, it looks terrifying.
Because I love to immerse myself because obviously as a model and having anxiety most of my life, I mean, food was just like, and I used food as fuel rather than enjoyment. And it suddenly opened my mind to, you know, textures and flavours and how exciting food is and how delicious and so I was like, oh my God, right, I need a restaurant now. And then I got a restaurant.
Michelin star incoming.
With two Rosette.
Wow.
Yeah, with two Rosette.
That's amazing.
So quite foodie. I'm so proud of it. I mean, we literally got the pub 8 years ago straight to Brexit. So couldn't find anyone to work for us. Then went straight into a pandemic. Now cost of living. now energy crisis.
What are you saying no to then?
Cause... No, I do have, I have days where I just go, no, I'm going to have a day at home. I'm going to have a lie-in. I'm going to chill. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to have that meeting. I'm going to cancel all that. Yeah, I do have learned to kind of be kind to myself a bit more rather than kind of flagellate.
How was the anxiety after modelling? Did it
good?
Did you get rid of
good
for the most part? Learn to live with it, yeah.
Yeah, and no, but I think what happens is you just retrain your brain. So I've retrained my brain from not to just every now and then kind of decide to squirt that kind of gland, whatever it secretes, to make you go into fight or flight. People are going to be listening, going, gosh, you haven't seen those. I've seen nothing about it. I can't remember. It's not serotonin.
It sounded quite convincing to me.
I like it. Squirt that glass.
Squirt that glass. But I think it just gets used to squirting. So I think you've got to kind of control it and go, you don't need to squirt all the time. Sorry.
That's the title of this episode. Jodie Kidd, you don't need to squirt all the time.
Oh, dearie me. Yeah, so it kind of just got less and less and less. And now I understand what's going on. Because at the beginning I thought, I'm going to die. My heart is going to come out my chest and it's going to explode and I'm going to die in front of everyone. And that was, you know, and that's just terrifying. Whereas now if it starts going, you know, sweaty palms, you can feel it. You just, I have to go, okay, calm, get the brain onto something else, get out of this situation, maybe walk into another room, do something. And I kind of know how to deal with it a little bit. And then it disappears.
That's so accurate, that description, because it does feel like you're going to die, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It feels like there's too much happening for you not to like explode or just die.
Oh my God, it's horrendous.
It's horrible. Yeah.
I'm sorry you get it.
Oh no,
Did.
Yeah. I'm much, much better now, but it's a horrible feeling.
Babies are really good because they're grounding. They ground you.
I feel like my baby's completely cured my anxiety.
Yeah, they do.
It's so bizarre. Yeah. Husband Alex and I were looking at photos last night of when Arlo was born the first week. I was like, I don't think I've ever looked calmer, which is so perverse.
Really?
Yeah. Do you feel like indeed?
They do.
Calmed you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think there's something that goes on in the body. There's so many different hormones that start kicking in and things like that, that this little squirting one that's the, you know, you only really want it to squirt if, you know, when there's danger, not when you're in a supermarket. I think everything just gets, it just, you know, it's, what's it called?
Recalibrates.
Yeah. So I think it just redoes that. And then basically you haven't got any time to think about anything else apart from this little person that your brain, I suppose, is focused and it's not allowed to run wild. And
that's good to know, actually. That's very reassuring.
Yeah. Apart from the sleep. The sleep normally makes you a little bit wobbly.
A little bit of
sleep.
Yeah. But it's all right.
But it's okay. I can't cope when he's going to be like 18. I've told him he can't leave home until he's 32.
That seems reasonable. he's like, okay.
God, you're going to be like that.
It's so funny, isn't it? As like a parent, because you went off to travel the world and live your dream at 50, or live a dream at 15. And then as a parent, you're like, no, you're not going anywhere. You're going to stay with
right? me. So terrible.
Do as I say, not as I do.
No, I won't be that bad, I promise.
If he wanted to go and model,
would you want him to?
Big question. I think because I know the industry, I would be okay with it. But the male side of modeling is not, you know, you never get paid as much. You're always the one in the background. You know, it's very female led, which is wonderful, you know, which I think is great. And one of the few industries that have always been, you know, female first. But I think because I know it, I would be happy. Yeah. It's a biggie though. It's a biggie.
Yeah, because you could hold his hand.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I'd be one of those mothers.
Yeah.
I'll be controlling the
Jenner over here.
Like a pushy momager. Mums I was talking about earlier.
It's interesting to hear that because actually we don't really hear much about the male experience of modelling, do we? We hear a lot about
it's hard. But... It's really hard. And they've had some really tough times, you know, a lot of the guys.
Yeah, I'd say as well, because you're saying that about your body, like you were just naturally a very thin person when you weren't eating properly.
Yeah.
But men, they don't want that. That's not the aspirational.
They've got to work out.
Yeah, very specific.
Yes.
Like they've got to be muscly.
Yeah. They have got, you know, it's an intense kind of routine. Whereas we just, you know, we just got to be kind of like, nothing really. But no, it's changing. You know, it kind of goes in this circles for women specifically. They kind of like, you had your supers, which was kind of all much more bustier, hippier, really beautiful. Then we went through the waif, which I was part. And then it kind of went into the Brazilian, which was much more kind of curvier. The guys have to, you know, you've got to have a big six pack, you know, and that's dedication and work, and you know, and then to be rejected after that as well, you know, it's a funny old world.
How do you take asking for a friend, how do you get good at taking rejection, or did you not really have to?
Because I did. I mean, it's really difficult because I could turn up on time, I could look good, my hair will be brushed, I can, you know, do whatever they wanted me to do, but just because, you know, my eyes were slightly bluer than the art director wanted, you didn't get the job. You know, it could be tiny things, and you've got to get your head round that it's not your fault. Mm. You know, it's not you, and you know, it's something specific that these people want to look at or something along those lines. So you've just got to start kind of just protecting yourself, I suppose.
Are you protected by your agent? Do they shield you from the reasons for rejection?
Yeah, I was very lucky to have a very, very good agent that was amazing. And I had, you know, a whole set of wonderful agents. But, you know, some are not so protective, definitely. So, yes, I was, you know, just very thankful for that, having, you know, good people around me. But they're not all like that.
No.
Yeah, because I guess like you don't need to know all the reasons why you're rejected, right? They could just be like, they've gone elsewhere.
It could be absolutely nothing. Yeah. It could be like, oh, I've only got, for the campaign, I've only got size 40 shoes and you're 41 and you're going to make the, you know, the shoes look weird. It could be anything.
Yeah. But are you good at accepting that, or were you one of these people that would be like, oh no, it's my fault. It's because of me. Do you know what I mean?
It took a long time to learn, because being a rider and a competitive rider, if you put 100% in, you'll get 110 out of your horse. So I was always, if you put that time in, you'll get it out. And it was a bit of a head mess to put that effort in and to not get the job. So it took a little bit of a kind of adjusting of going, okay, this is not like dealing with animals and things like that. So it was a bit of a change, but I just kind of, you just got to put your light around you and protect yourself and try and move on.
That's nice.
That is nice.
Way of describing it.
I would not.
Just put your light on.
Put my light on.
Is that how you describe it?
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, that's so nice. Like, what does the light look like?
Well, you just, like, cover your body with this nice glowing light and it protects you.
Oh, my God, I want to do that.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I like that.
I haven't even started drinking it. you just kind of picture this light around you and you just feel it and then it protects you.
How often do you put your light on?
A lot.
That's so nice. I want to start putting my light on.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that.
Wow. Yeah. I really like that.
It's like little aura. Little aura around you.
It does sort of feel like... Sorry, I'll get to you with compliments in a minute.
A long time coming.
Sorry. But as a person, you feel like you do have that light around you. Like, as long as I've known you, it feels like nothing that life has ever thrown at you has diminished any of your light. Like, you feel consistently warm. I don't think I've ever seen you on a bad day. I don't think I've ever seen you not smiling. Like, you just seem like an incredibly happy, and even though you're never sit still and you're always so busy, you feel very grounded.
Yeah.
Like, as a human.
Yeah.
I
I want that.
Yeah. It's taken a lot, though. I do have, you know, do have bad days, do have days where I'm finding it hard to get out of bed and just want to have a shut down day. But I just kind of like, I'm just very kind of grateful about life. And I'm very kind of just thankful and, you know, try to just be as kind as I possibly can. And I think that that's, you know, it's really, really important. And yeah, it's kind of how I live, really. Just keep smiling, keep hugging, hug everybody.
I love that.
And yeah, just being kind. I mean, there's enough kind of people that need that.
Yeah.
Just a big smile or a big cuddle just lights, makes people's days. So that's great. If that's my little mission for the day, then I'm happy to do that.
You must be the happiest landlady. That's why people come to your pub in their droves. They're like, we get a cuddle.
Yeah, you get a cuddle and a smile. Get lots of cuddles.
Yeah.
And definitely the wrong pint because, you know, I completely forget. Forget orders.
Where is your pub and what's it called?
It's called The Half Moon in a lovely little village called Curdford in Sussex.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's great. You haven't been
yet. I know. I was like, oh, she's going to say that.
Terrible.
Let's go. We're going.
We have the best Sunday roast
ever. Let's go.
I tell you, it's so good. I'm so proud of the team and Gavin and everyone. They're just amazing. They really are. It hasn't been easy. But yeah, it's good. It's lovely.
Can we do a Should I Delete That meetup at the Half Moon in Sussex?
Yes,
please.
Let's do another one.
Let's go.
I'll bring my microphones.
Yeah. Oh my God, fun.
I've done podcasts there.
I was going to say, do it like Jesse
Ware's
podcast.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, we're coming.
Do a morning full of podcasts and then a big Sunday roast.
Oh, please. Yeah. Okay.
It's yours.
Murder a Sunday roast.
It's yours. Yes. It's official.
Wednesday morning. We're
say
all
no
like,
more.
Yeah,
food. Gravy. Oh.
Food. Jodie, thank you so much.
Oh, God, sorry if I just been like nattering.
No, that's not too much. Literally.
Yeah.
I love talking to you. Thank you.
Oh, I love you guys.
Love you. Thank you.
Should I Delete That is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.